Welcome to Speaking with Joy, the podcast about books, beauty, and music. So get yourself a cup of tea, sit down, and let's begin. Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Speaking with Joy. I have a very special guest this week. Last week, I told you all that I was working away so that I could have my self-imposed fall break, and it was all an expectation of a visitor to inaugurate it, and that is my dear mama, and she is here with me. So say hi, mama.
Hi, everyone. How are you today?
It's so fun to have her, and many of you may know that she is a podcaster herself, so I thought it'd be fun to have my special guest on. So, Mom, what have we done this week? What has been our adventures and your favorite things we've done?
My favorite thing to do, many people who listen to my podcast know that my children are my most and best and dearest friends. So what we've mainly been doing is walking our 10,000 steps all around St. Andrews, and then always eating or drinking something wonderful, and then talking about great things and being friends. And I just love being here. So we've done lots of fun things like that.
Have you seen any things you particularly liked? Do you like the cathedral?
Yeah, I love the cathedral.
The ruins, I should say.
The ruins in St. Andrews, and it's right on that wild ocean. And I think everyone, if they ever have a chance, should come to St. Andrews. It's one of the quintessentially most charming European towns I've ever been to. But these ruins, I'm just astounded. They are absolutely gigantic.
They're as big as, if this is a good reference point for you, they are as big as Chartres in France, which is like one of the most glorious cathedrals. Mm-hmm. And if it weren't ruined, it would be that big, which is mm-hmm. crazy.
And it's a place where literally, I love walking in places of history because it inspires me to live my story well. And there were thousands and thousands of people who came here to this seaside town. It was much bigger than Edinburgh at the time. Mm-hmm. And to think of the lives that were here and the people who were martyred for their faith. And it's real inspiring and amazing to see how in such a different time they built this incredibly huge, beautiful cathedral right on the ocean.
Yeah. And one thing that's really cool about the cathedral is, you know, there's kind of a sadness in seeing mm-hmm. this beautiful cathedral that was, you know, torn down and then went into ruins, and all the fighting that Christians did with each other over the years. That's because there's kind of a sadness in that, but something that's sort of redeeming and that's also makes St. Andrews beautiful is that the townspeople eventually used the stones from the cathedral to make their homes. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of the homes around in and around St. Andrews are made of the stones. And mm-hmm. so it's really cool to kind of see that the cathedral gave itself up for the town. And but we had a lot of fun walking around and thinking about the history and mm-hmm. and then eating.
And then eating.
What was one of your favorite places we went this week, Mom?
Well, I love this tiny little, I'm really into coffee right now. Joy knows that I'm kind of addicted. But there's a lovely little coffee shop called Taste. Mm-hmm. And we go there and get the most wonderful, I kept saying, I want a white flat, but really what I wanted was a flat white. And these lovely little croissant kind of twists that
like
have
chocolate and vanilla.
Chocolate and vanilla sauce. It's amazing. And mm. you can have the most wonderful conversations when you're eating those.
Yes, they're very inspiring.
And then we went to the most popular or the best fish and chips place mm-hmm. in all of Scotland. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it is about eating a very crispy, hot piece of fish on the ocean front in St. Andrews that makes it better, but it does.
It most certainly does. All right, well, I will let you go in just a moment, but this week's episode is going to be all about food because it's Thanksgiving week, and mm-hmm. I just thought I would do a light episode, and we're going to talk about food and why we gather at the table and various artworks and how they deal with that. So before you go, mm-hmm. I am about to release you back to Colorado for Thanksgiving, which is very sad.
Yes.
But we have had so many happy family memories around food and having to do with that. And so I thought I would ask you, what is, and I'm not actually sure that I know the answer to this, what is one of your favorite dishes that you always made for Thanksgiving?
Well, I make the traditional, I make two different kinds of dressings. Mm-hmm. Some people call them stuffings, but we don't put them in our turkey.
Yes.
And I make my mother's and my grandmother's sage dressing with lots of butter and lots of celery and lots of onions and lots of different herbs. And I put a lot of bouillon, chicken bouillon in it, or turkey, I should say. And I love pecan pie. And I love the squash casserole, the yellow squash casserole with breadcrumbs and onions. And I kind of like it all, actually.
I know. I feel like there's two different kinds of Thanksgiving people. Mm-hmm. There's the Thanksgiving people who put everything on their plate and they kind of have it all separated. And then there's the people who like a little taste of everything all at the same time.
Yeah, they kind of put it all on one fork.
That it all tastes good because it all tastes good together.
I know. Well, happy Thanksgiving to all of you wonderful people listening. And it's so fun to be here.
Yes, and thank you for coming on my podcast, sitting on my chair with me.
Oh, it's lovely. And now we're off to a 5-hour train ride together, which will be really fun.
Yes. Now, this week's topic is something very serious, very grave, and very important, and that is food. So, for all of my American listeners, which I think is about 80% of you, you know that this week is all tumbling towards the great you catastrophe that is Thanksgiving. Over here, like I told you last week, I've been working away so that I can get ready to jump on the train with my mom tomorrow and head down to Oxford to be with my sister for Thanksgiving. And so everything has been kind of hard work, but it's all going to be rewarded with great feasting on Thursday. And I imagine the rest of you all, whether you're college students finishing all of your exams before heading home or before doing a Friendsgiving, or if you are families and you're trying to scramble everyone together and get a few delicious tasting things, I would imagine that all of our weeks are revolving in some way or another around Thanksgiving, which is to say that it's revolving around food. Now, I am a firm believer that food has a deep spiritual, social, emotional, and philosophical importance. And this is something that I believe both because I love food and also because I've thought about it a lot. Of course, any of you may know that my mom just published a book called The Life-Giving Table. So she is all about food and the impact it has on our relationships and the way that we think about our world and the way we relate to God. And I helped her with that, the Life-Giving Table experience. So I got to think about in the context of all the feasts that are in the Bible. But yes, I think that food is one of those things that is underappreciated and under-talked about. Because if you think about it, if we have to spend 3 times a day, more if you're me, eating, surely it is something that will shape our life. And it shapes our life both by the delight of food, the process that is sometimes mundane of making it, and the people we eat with. And of course, that is none more obvious than when we have something like a feast of Thanksgiving, you know, that we have these special moments of eating that say something even more profound. So I thought, as we are all probably busying towards Thanksgiving, that I would talk about a lighter subject today, and we would look at three pieces of art dealing with food. And yes, believe it or not, there are numerous pieces of art dealing with food. So today, I'll give you a little preview. We're going to talk about a poem, which is an ode to cheese by Malcolm Gait, the inimitable poet and priest. And then you'll probably also hear me monologue about how many feasts there are in Lord of the Rings and why I think that is and why it's important. And then we'll talk about a lovely and very humorous painting called Don't Try to Steal the Food, or, oh wait, what's it called? Oh no, it's called Kiss Me. I was reading you my own notes about the actual painting, so I was getting ahead of myself. The painting is called Kiss Me and You'll Kiss the Lasses, and I'll talk about that in a little bit. And then finally, we'll listen to a song that I always associate with Thanksgiving that really captures the beauty of sitting around a table and feasting and being thankful with those you love, by Noah Gunderson, called Honest Songs. So without further ado, let us dive in. So G.K. Chesterton, one of my favorite authors, has a quote where he says, "Poets have been mysteriously silent on the subject of cheese." I have always loved this quote, and I find it really amusing because, of course, his point is that for something that so many of us feel a great passionate love for, there is a surprisingly little amount of poetry. And one of my favorite people and favorite artists who I have had the pleasure of meeting and knowing, took it into his hands to do something about that. So Malcolm Guite, who is, if you don't know about him, he is a professor at Cambridge University and a priest and a musician and a poet nonetheless. And he has done some beautiful work I particularly love. He's got a collection of poems called The Singing Bowl, and then also a collection of poems called Sounding the Seasons, where he wrote poetry for all of the times in the church year. But in addition to that, he also wrote a poem called Ode to Cheese. And I discovered this because we're Facebook friends, and a couple years ago I had posted a picture of my best friend Elena and Sarah, my sister, and I had gone on a picnic, and we had a whole thing of brie cheese, which we ate on our picnic all in one sitting. And we did that after walking around Addison's Walk in Oxford, which is this, supposedly it's where C.S. Lewis became a Christian, and it's this big deer park, and we had taken a whole bunch of stuff out. And so I took a picture of us and I posted it. And I posted the quote from Chesterton where he says, "Poets have been mysteriously silent on the subject of cheese." And Malcolm comments back with this with this poem on cheese. And I was just so delighted and shocked. So this is just a fun beginning to celebrate food, which we should be celebrating food this weekend. And especially celebrating that we have such easy access to food, and that that is not a given in every culture and society, but that we do, and that cheese is one of the great delights of life, at least for mine. So, let me read you this poem, Ode to Cheese, by Malcolm Guite. Poets have been silent about cheese, because whilst every subject is the message, cheese is the very medium of their work. We drink in language with our mother's milk, but poets curdle words until they bite with substance and flavor of their own. So Don is sharp and Jeffrey Hill is sour. Larkin acerbic, Tennyson has power, but only late at night, taken with port. I like them all and sample every sort, from creamy Keats with his mossed cottage trees, tasting the words themselves like cottage cheese, to Eliot, difficult and cold collations, crumbling and stuffed with other folks' quotations. So that is a little bit of that poem, and I find it absolutely delightful because his thesis is that the reason that we don't have more poems on cheese is because cheese was the very fuel that helped the poets to write. And then he compares it to all these different poets like Keats and Eliot and Donne. So anyway, that is just a delightful little poem that I thought I'd share with you all, and that you can keep in your back pocket if you ever need to have something poetic and beautiful to say as you're eating some brie cheese. And also on our literary bent of art, I thought I would also talk about feasting and food in The Lord of the Rings. Now, for those of you who have read Lord of the Rings, you'll know what I'm talking about. Those who haven't, I hope this inspires you and doesn't scare you away from reading, especially the first one. When I first read it, I was really kind of amused slash bemused by how many parts there are in Fellowship of the Ring where they literally, it's like they have a scary thing happen and then they walk for a while and then they eat and then they have another scary thing happen and then they walk for a long, long time and then they eat. And it's just like that forms the whole first part of Lord of the Rings. It's just going from place to place, having scary things happening and then eating. And I remember at first when I read it, I was kind of like, my glory, there are, why is there so much eating? But I think that this is not accidental. Tolkien, you know, being a fastidious writer and being almost ridiculously careful with his story, did not just kind of forget and have a whole bunch of feasting scenes. I think that he actually had something of a philosophy of feasting. And that could be summed up in he is famously quoted as saying, "If more of us valued food and cheer and song above hoarded gold, it would be a merrier world." And Tolkien specifically wrote the hobbits in Lord of the Rings as these kind of foodies, you know, the foodies of Middle-earth, that they love feasting and food. And that's kind of what drives how often they eat, and especially in Fellowship of the Ring, because, you know, you've got these four hobbits, Sam, Frodo, Merry, and Pippin, and they constantly need to eat. But I think that that philosophy that goes with this is that Tolkien kind of had this idea that it's easy for us to think of the heroes of the world as being these kind of great noble people who forget they have bodies and transcend in the spirit and do brave things, which of course is very good. But what Tolkien believed is that the people who save the world are the people who are humble, who are of the earth, who love feasting, and that there is this kind of humble love centered around ordinary life and things like feasting and gardening that creates a more sturdy and brave way of fighting the world than even those who are kind of, you know, heroic in the way we'd usually think of it. And he kind of modeled that after thinking about in World War II. He said, you know, the people that kept England and Europe going were the ordinary farmers who, for love of their country, gave up what they could and took care of their neighbors for a love of feasting and meals. And not just for that, but that there's something that symbolizes that connection to community, that love of the wholesome and the good and the ordinary, those most basic human things, that makes us more able to fight for the good and fight for our neighbors. And I think another thing that goes along with that is that feasting is part of how you connect with your fellowship. Like, you know, you got the Fellowship of the Ring, the Nine. I think the whole first, kind of the point of the Fellowship of the Ring, its title, is that there was this tightly knit community of people that were there to fight evil. And part of the way they become the fellowship is by eating together. And so I think that's a great example of how food is not inconsequential. It has two real, you know, philosophical things that are helpful about it. First, that it bonds us to those ordinary things of life that make our heroism not about, you know, just bringing glory to ourselves, but about protecting the good, the homely, that which is worth protecting, but also that it bonds us to our fellowship. And, you know, I think about this last year. I lived in this big postgraduate dorm called Dean's Court, and it was kind of accidental. I had gotten replaced there, and I don't even know how, because it's actually really hard to be placed there, but it's this old, it's like, gosh, it's probably like 500 or 600 year old. It was the dean of the cathedral, so the guy who used to take care of the cathedral. It's his court, so this big house, and now they house postgraduate students there. And I lived there last year, and part of the deal is that you get, there's a dining hall, so you can have food every day. So there's about 50 master's, PhD students from all over the world in totally different disciplines. But you end up eating with them, you know, 3 times a day, five days a week. And I was amazed at what close friendships I developed, kind of purely because we were thrown together for 3 meals a day. And around these tables, you have these incredibly diverse people from all over the world studying totally different subjects. But that kind of bonding of us all having to sit every day and eat with the same people and discuss what we're working on created these really deep and fun and funny friendships that I really miss this year. But to me, that was it was a prime example of how eating together and kind of that necessity of being drawn together rhythmically every day for meals creates fellowship. And that is something that I have always been grateful for, is that we are not like cars that fill up our tank and we can go, you know, for several days without food, but that we need it regularly, because that not only just nourishes our body, but it makes us interact with people and keeps us from being lonely and bonds us to our fellowship, just like the hobbits are bonded to Lord of the Rings. Okay, so that's our literary example, and then let me hop on to our next one, which is this painting called Kiss Me and You'll Kiss the Lasses. This is by, oh wait, let me pull up her name, Lily Martin Spencer, and it is this, it's just a really amusing painting. It's of a girl looking over her shoulder, rather kind of humorously and flirtatiously, as she's putting together this big feast. And she's, you know, everything's not quite finished yet. And you get the sense, and this is the part of the title, that she's just about to finish creating this feast. And presumably her husband is about to come up and try to kiss her or take some of the food away. And kiss me, your kiss the lasses means, you know, if you come over here and kiss me, I'm going to get molasses on you. So don't try. And I was just very amused by this painting. It's very cheerful. And I also felt that it captured the experience that many of us may or may not have had of cooking and being nearly done and having curious tasters who are trying to come and steal the food before it is finished. So I think in the spirit of this very plucky woman, we can tell them to get away or else they'll taste the lasses and we'll get it all over them. But no, I just was amused by this painting. And I also quite like the artist. She's very much worth knowing. She lived from 1822 to 1902, and she was one of the most, or possibly the most popular and widely distributed female painters in the 19th century, especially in America. She's very, very gifted. She was famous for, so Wikipedia says she was famous for, quote, Madonna-like mothers, happy housewives, and lovable, inept husbands. You just gotta love a little bit of playful sexism in there. No, I'm kidding. But what is funny, though, is that she did not have an inept husband. She was married very happily to Benjamin Rush Spencer for... Sorry, my mom just walked in. Hello, mother.
Hi. I'll talk to you. Can't wait to be on.
She was married to him for 46 years, and they had 13 children together, which is so many children. But what's fun is that he was not an inept husband, and that she continued to be the main kind of breadwinner for their household as she painted all these beautiful paintings, and they ran their house together, and he was kind of the master of the domain. And so was apparently not an inept house husband. But yes, so I found this painting darling, and I found her story to be very interesting and fun. And it's so, go look her up and show this painting to anyone who tries to eat your potatoes over your shoulder when you are cooking and not finished yet. In my experience, brothers are the worst offenders at this, but you know, do as you will. So for our final art piece, talking about food this week, I wanted to talk about a song that has always kind of touched me, and it's by Noah Gunderson. It's called Honest Songs, and I'm not sure if he intended this to be about Thanksgiving, but it really captures that feeling of whatever holidays may be for you, going home and being with family. I just love the way it opens. The lines that it opens with are, "As we gather round the table and say a prayer for those we love, all the words that could be spoken will never be enough to encompass all the feelings that our brittle hearts can bear. All the storms that rage inside us fill our organs up with air." But our hearts, they sing an honest song. Our hearts sing an honest song. And I always loved that kind of as a different sort of picture of coming to holiday meals with family. Because there's this reality that holidays like Thanksgiving bring us together kind of, you know, not out of compulsion, but in a special way where we wouldn't normally get together. And we bring with us all of these experiences and all the storms that rage inside us. But that there is a grace out of just being able to eat together and be together and acknowledge those storms that rage inside us. And yet even in that space, kind of share a bit of Thanksgiving. That really resonates truly with me in my experience of Thanksgiving. And of really just a feasting together with family, and that is part of what food brings us to, is it brings us all back over and over again, no matter how we're doing, to kind of our state of need and of need for grace. And that's something that I think is one of the spiritual truths and the social emotional truths of food, is that it's kind of one of those essential things that reminds us that we are all needy human beings and that we can't do life alone. You know, if, like I said earlier, we are not like cars that fill up once and can, you know, just go for days and days. We need this irrational thing, putting stuff into our eating food over and over again every day as a reminder that we are people who need things for our bodies. We're contingent on that. But we also need the fellowship and the community that comes with the people that we eat around the table with. And that when I dwell on that and I dwell on the richness of those things that feed those necessary needs in my life, the people that I eat with, and the food that I am reminded that I have to eat over and over again because I'm a person who can't do life alone, that I'm essentially, that I need others, that I need food, that I need God, that always brings me back to a place of Thanksgiving and back to a place of kind of thankfulness and reminding me who I am at the core of who I am. Because it's so easy to kind of pretend like we can just make it through life and do everything on our own, but coming together around food reminds us that we need food, we need people, and that's an essential part of our needs as humans. So I hope that this week that you enjoy feasting, that it has all the inspiration that Malcolm Guite's poem about cheese would be, that you will feel the bonding of fellowship that happens over a table, just like J.R.R. Tolkien would encourage, that you can beat everyone off of the food before it's finished, and like the impish lass in our lovely painting, and that you experience the meaningfulness of returning to the people and the food and remembering that you can't live life alone, and be thankful for the people who are around you. And if you do feel alone this Thanksgiving, I am praying that you have surprising people that come around you and that make you feel loved and remind you that you're not alone. So I am off to London. Much love. And I thought I would end this podcast by playing Noah Gunderson's song for you and wishing you a very happy Thanksgiving week.
As we gather round the table, say a prayer for those we love. All the words that will be spoken will never be enough to encompass all the feelings that our brittle hearts can bear. All the storms that rage inside us fill our organs up with air, and the sound it makes is an honest song. Our hearts sing an honest song. And all the time spent catching raindrops, all the time we've spent in bed, all the hours we have wasted, we will never see again. So be good with what you're given, for it's all you have to give. We are only passing shadows in a mighty wind. And the sound it makes is an honest song. Our hearts sing.